To exercise power costs effort and demands courage. That is why so many fail to assert rights to which they are perfectly entitled. Because a right is a kind of power, but they are too lazy or too cowardly to exercise it. The virtues which cloak these faults are called patience and forbearance. And the opening quote this week comes from Friedrich Nietzsche. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I will be your host for the next hour. The people of the world today live their lives inside a control system that most people never even notice exists. It's an extremely sophisticated system, and yet a very simple system. And it exists mostly simply because people believe that it is there. Because really, when you look at the control grid that has been put in place on this planet, what you find is that it is simply a meme, and that all it really is the idea that authority is real. This unquestioning belief in the existence of authority is really a huge problem with the human psyche, and it is a very, very major part of the control system that is in place. But another part of it is the paper-based reality that people are enslaved to, what I call the paper-based matrix that people actually believe is real. Now, over the years, and most especially in recent times, there have been many, many people that have brought this information to you and have sought to explain this paper-based reality to you. There's many people that have brought you information regarding the birth certificate. Many people who have suggested that you question the validity and truth of statutes and legislation when they claim to be law. I mean, where do these things come from? Where do legislation and statutes and acts come from? Because when we really know what law is, the true definition of law, you know, the true law of mankind, the true law of creation, the true law of reality, it's basically just the difference between good and bad, is it not? That's really what it is. Really, as I've often said, there's only actually one law, and that is do no harm. Regardless of what you do, as long as it doesn't interfere with other people or cause harm to other people or cause harm to the earth or harm to someone or something by your actions, then you have broken no law. All the rest of it is legislation, simply statutes and acts and rules that people make up. They have these ideas, they write them down on little pieces of paper, and they hit it with a rubber stamp, and then they say, you've got to do that, because you put me in a position where I am the one in charge of looking after the infrastructure of this society, and so now you have to do exactly what I say, because I'm putting rules in place which are going to preserve and expand and make this infrastructure better for all the people. Well, that's the way it's supposed to be. Really, when you look at it, that's what we have. We employ a government to manage our infrastructure for us, and we expect them to improve and expand upon and make this infrastructure more beneficial for society. But what they do is they enact rules instead, and they use these rules to corral and control society into a more and more confined and boxed group, and then they steal the resources of the country and exploit the people of the country and sell all the wealth off to foreign interests. That's basically what's going on here in Australia. That's what's going on in every country. That's what we have here in what we call civilization. We have a group of disempowered and corralled people and another very small group who these first group elect into positions of management who are actually working very hard to steal the wealth of everybody else. And you see, that is the purpose of government, folks. The purpose of government is to steal the wealth of any given nation and to appease the people and make them think that it's okay for the world to be this way and that it's all being done in their best interests. That is the sole purpose of government. This is why government is run by politicians rather than people with good managerial skills. They have to employ people who've got slick tongues, who can convince the slaves to enjoy their servitude and convince them that it is all very necessary for them to suffer because it will ultimately bring about their well-being. This is what austerity measures and things are all about. I mean, what is austerity? Austerity is the government appeasing you for the poverty that they're about to impose upon you and telling you that it's all good and it's all being done for your best interests. And if you really want to be free and be abundant, then you need to basically give up everything that you've got. That's what austerity is. And governments and politicians are very good at convincing people that they need this sort of stuff going on. In fact, governments work very hard to convince people that they need government, because ultimately we don't. The entire concept that we need authority figures to rule over us and to hold our hand for us and pick us up when we fall is completely and utterly erroneous. And it is an idea that has been subconsciously ingrained into people via the governments themselves, through the mechanism of the government-controlled education system. Because, you see, that is one of the main purposes of the scholastic system, is to instill into people a deep-seated respect for authority. It's actually an old Chinese proverb, or an old Chinese saying, that says, if you wish to defeat your enemy, bring up his children. And when you look at our society, that's kind of what has been done to us. Because these governments want to control us, they bring up our children, and they train the children that it's good to be controlled and that authority is there for your best interests, when, of course, nothing could be further from the truth. But ultimately, folks, when you really look at this whole control mechanism, it's simply a meme. It's just an idea. Because the entire mechanism only exists on paper, and the rules are only given substance through our belief that these rules are real and that they actually apply to us. And this is done through a very, very clever system of trickery, which I mentioned before and which I refer to as the paper-based matrix. And it revolves around your birth certificate and who you believe you are and who and what these rules that they write on pieces of paper actually apply to. But even before you look at things from that perspective and start understanding what the birth certificate and all of this documentation does, one first needs to understand what government actually is. Because what government actually is a group of elected trustees who are put in place and employed by the people in order to manage our infrastructure for us and to ensure that we have a functional and fair society. But the essential thing to understand about these politicians and about all public servants is that what they are public trustees, because they are put in positions of trust and granted power via the people themselves. In fact, the only power that these people have comes from the people who employ them, and that is you. And if any public trustees, any government officials, any politicians, any public servants at all are enacting legislation or putting rules into place which are causing any type of hardship at all for anybody within their society, then these people are in breach of trust and are abusing the power that we have given them. And it's very important for people to understand this and to look at things from this perspective. If your life is a struggle and you're in a state of hardship due to legislation that's been put in place by governments, then your governments are abusing their power and they are standing in breach of trust. And if you support these governments, if you pay rates to these governments, if you pay taxes to these governments, and if you vote for these governments, then you are supporting this abuse of power. You are supporting the theft of your nation. You are supporting these people stealing from your neighbors and stealing from yourself. That's the way it works. Because ultimately, they're simply public trustees who are put in positions of trust. And if they are abusing that trust, well, who is going to do something about it? Well, of course, folks, the only people who can do anything about it are the people who are the granters of that trust to the trustees and the beneficiaries of the actions of the trustees. And that, of course, is the people themselves. And so that's where the remedy lies, folks. That's where the remedy to all of this situation lies. It lies in the hearts of the people themselves, if they choose to stand up and be counted. And so what is it about people? What is it that prevents people from standing up and being counted? what is it that prevents people from seeing the control grid that is all around them? Because it exists everywhere, and it's very, very obvious once you can see it. So what is it that prevents people from noticing this and that prevents them from standing up and exercising the rights to which they are inherently entitled? Well, there are many reasons why this occurs. One of the main reasons, though, and not in all countries, but one of the main reasons in many Western countries is the diet that people have, the food they consume, and very often also the fluoride in their water supply. And again, this is not all countries, because there are many countries where fluoride has now been banned. Most of Europe, I believe, has banned fluoride because, after all, it is a toxic waste that inhibits brain function, and it has been banned for this very reason. But in many countries, such as here in Australia, it's very difficult for the people to even see the control grid. And even if they do see it, they don't know how to stand up because they don't really know how to organize themselves properly. And the reason they don't is because they just can't think very clearly. They may not realize that, but they can't. And the reason they can't is because of the fluoride in the water supply. This is one of the effects of fluoride. Fluoride is a very, very beneficial thing for governments to maintain control with. And that is exactly what they use it for, because a fluoridated population finds it very, very difficult to organize themselves because they simply can't think too clearly. And of course, we live in a society where if you even suggest this to someone, they take it as an affront against their ego. They think that you're calling them stupid, and they usually want to have a fight with you or something like that. This is all programs, folks. This is the way people are programmed to deal with this information. This is the way people are programmed to react if you even attempt to point out to them that they may be being medicated by their government. Very clever system, folks. And it's this type of attitude that people have which causes other people to police themselves in what they say. It's very, very difficult to approach people and suggest these things to them because you are scared of the reaction that it may cause. And of course, the reaction is generally a programmed reaction, as I've just described. And you'll find that much of what people say and do in regard to any situation is a programmed reaction very often. And there are many programmed situations that happen as well. Take the corporate rape of this country, the corporate rape of all countries. What's going on? The way they're pulling all the resources out and the way we can't seem to be able to do anything to stop it. Take it here in Australia. We're seeing a huge amount of damage done through industries such as coal seam gas mining and even the coal industry itself. And you look at what coal seam gas does. It basically, you've got companies carrying out environmental vandalism and destroying groundwater and arable farming land quite often. And these are very valuable resources. And when the people who live in these places and the people who respect and love their country show up to attempt to stop this corporate rape of their natural resources, the police show up, and you find that the police don't support the preservation of the natural resources. They don't uphold the natural law of the country to preserve groundwater. In Australia here, it's actually illegal to pollute groundwater. And yet the police show up and they support the company. They always support the company and the corporation that is doing the damage. They never support the people when the people are the ones actually attempting to uphold the natural law of the land. The police use excuses such as you are blocking a public thoroughfare. Even if it's on private property, they do this sort of stuff here in Australia. They say that you're blocking the roadway and that this is against the law, this sort of stuff. These are the excuses that they use. And at rallies, at peaceful rallies, the police show up to create violence so that they can then disperse the rally and arrest whichever protesters attempted to defend themselves against the police violence that was inflicted upon them. And they do this in a very clever way, because they arrive at these rallies and they say they're there to ensure the rally remains peaceful. And yet their very presence is what creates the disturbance and ultimately leads to the violence, which leads to the arrest of people. So they're never ever there to ensure the peaceful rally remains peaceful. I mean, why would they be there when the rally is already peaceful and their very presence is what creates the disturbance? And of course, the media supports all of these actions and always says that many, many police were needed to contain the violent rally that just happened. But they never report the actual facts that the rally was actually quite peaceful before the police showed up and created the disturbance that they portray for you on the news. And look, not all police are bad. Don't get me wrong with this. I mean, many of them can't think clearly because they're fluoridated and they just do what they're told. There are many police who are very sociopathic and do very bad things, but there are also many police who are quite good individuals and quite kind, caring people who actually join the police force to make a difference. Unfortunately, what they're subject to once they enter the police force is a rigidly hierarchical system of control, and they are forced to follow orders, and they are very much controlled by peer group pressure as well, because should they not do what they're told and be one of the boys and join the big boys club, then they get very much ridiculed and ostracized by their colleagues. So there is a whole psychological control grid that is in place within the police force in order to keep the police in line as well, just as much as everybody else. Every system has its own system of control, and the police department is certainly no exception. And of course, most of this control is psychological in nature. And you've really got to ask why we need so many police all the time anyway, ladies and gentlemen. And what we hear from our governments is that we need so many police because there has been such a huge escalation in crime. My God, when you look at the figures, look at the crime rates, look at the amount of crime that we have in the world today. And where does all this crime come from? Because if you go out and look around, you don't really see a lot of crime happening right before your eyes. So where does all of this crime come from? Why are the crime figures so high? Well, where crime comes from is from legislation, ladies and gentlemen, because ultimately there's only one law. I've often said this, there is one law to all of creation, and that law is do no harm. That's it. So where does all the rest of it come from? Well, it comes from legislation. For example, recently in the United States with Obamacare, they announced that there were going to be 40,000 new laws that were going to be coming into effect in 2014 due to Obamacare. So when you see 40,000 new laws coming into effect, what you essentially see is the creation of 40,000 new crimes. Because every time a law is broken, a crime is committed. If there is no law regarding that event, then no crime has been committed. People can step on the grass. There's a sign there saying, don't walk on the grass. Someone steps on the grass, they've committed a crime. Why is it a crime to step on the grass? It's a crime simply because an elected public trustee wrote it down on a piece of paper that it was a crime to step on the grass. They hit it with a rubber stamp, and then they said, now it is a law. But it's not. It's just legislation. And if the legislation causes harm to you, if you're not able to step on the grass when it's the normal thing that you do and it impedes your ability to be you and causes harm to you, then really it's broken the one law of creation, which is do no harm, and it's inflicted itself upon you. So if you step on the grass, have you broken the law? Or is the true reality the fact that the government has broken the law by enacting legislation which causes harm? And look, don't get me wrong here, I'm not having an issue with stepping on the grass, I'm simply using that as an example of how laws are constructed and how people are controlled and confined by these laws and restricted in what they can do by these laws, or by legislation masquerading as law. Legislation that claims to be law, because really that's what it is. It's statutes and acts, which if you look them up in Black's Law Dictionary, they're described as something that is granted the power of law through consent of the governed. So do you consent? Or do you not consent? Or is it a little deeper than that? Is it perhaps a little more sneaky than that? Have you in fact been tricked into consenting without knowing that you're doing so? Why is it a crime to walk outside of certain lines that are constructed for you by somebody else? This is how it works, folks. The more law you have, the more crime you have. And so you have the government saying, oh my God, there is so much crime, we're going to have to create more laws to deal with all of this crime. But of course, by creating more laws, all they do is create more crime. And then they can say how high the crime figures are, and they can employ more police, and they can make it illegal for you to step outside of any lines at all, and thereby they can arrest you for anything. Here in Queensland, Australia, we've actually had legislation put in place, the vicious, lawless, anti-social laws that have been put in place, and they claim these are to deal with bike gangs. But what these laws essentially say is that anybody over a group of two people can be arrested for basically any reason at all, and you don't get to go to trial, you just go straight to jail. They've created a sentence in court, essentially a star chamber, and they've basically removed all rights from the people of Queensland, and they're targeting gangs. But these gangs are so loosely defined that they will eventually be defined by anybody who is in a group of three or more people who breaks a law. And of course, as we can see, laws are created simply to create crime in order to make everybody a criminal so that at last everybody is uniform in the eyes of the law, and the corporate rape of whichever country the laws apply to can continue unabated. It's very, very important to understand that, folks, that with the creation of every law comes the creation of a new crime. And this is where most crime comes from. Most crime is, in fact, created for you and delivered to you fresh and piping hot to your door by your government. But, of course, it comes with a nice little bow and a smiling face and tells you that it's there for your protection. That's just the way they package it, and unfortunately many people buy into it simply because they don't really look at things from the correct perspective, and they don't really understand the difference between legislation and law, what law is and what legislation is, and where most crime actually comes from. And of course, I mean, there are violent crimes. There are people who do violent things, and we do need laws to protect ourselves and protect society, protect people from the violent actions of other people. But you find that most violent actions and most crime actually itself is created due to the commercial system that controls us anyway, because it's a commercial system which is designed to keep people in a perpetual state of scarcity, because everyone's always chasing the dollar because it's just designed that way. And that itself creates crime as well. So I'm not saying we don't need laws, but what we need are laws that do not do harm to society. Because unfortunately in most of our countries we've created systems which no longer serve the people. Most especially here in Queensland, Australia, where the new VLAD legislation brought in by the Queensland government in fact places the people of Queensland in a state of clear and present danger from their own government. The potential for the abuse of this legislation is absolutely unprecedented in Australian history. The mere concept that there could be certain groups or people within society that anybody in a gang, which is essentially, as I said, defined by this legislation as any group over three people who breaks law, basically, the mere concept that any of these people could be classed as a gang and be sentenced to time in prison without trial or right of appeal is absolutely an affront to all that is decent or all that is right and all that is good in any society. It is the basic foundation stones of a tyrannical fascist system that have just been put in place in this state. And that's why it is so important for the people of Queensland to take this matter in hand and to use this as an example to show the rest of the world how to deal with these governments when they get as out of control as the Queensland government so obviously is. And the reality is, folks, that all of these laws, the VLAD legislation included, all of it, is simply part of a paper-based matrix. It's part of the paper-based reality. It's a fictional legal reality which has been superimposed over what should be a lawful reality. And what is the difference between legislation and law? Well, as I've so often said, and as many other people have said, legislation is not law. Legislation is simply an attempt to remove natural law from existence and replace it with the will of politicians. And so you can see the paper-based matrix, the legal system, the legal fiction that these public trustees create to enslave the people is truly one of the most clever and effective mechanisms that is used. But the only reason it really is as effective as it is because people don't understand what they are and whether legislation actually applies to them. And many people will argue this and say, well, of course it does. Legislation is law and it applies to everybody. I'm sure a police officer will tell you this straight away. But really, they're just not looking at things from the correct perspective, and I don't think many people are, because there truly is a higher harmonic to all of this. And again, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not saying that we don't need laws. I'm not saying that we don't need rules. What I am saying is that we need rules that are beneficial to society and not rules that constrain the creative ability of society. And certainly not the type of rules that are put in place which basically remove all rights from the people, such as we have seen recently introduced in Queensland, Australia. But again, folks, there is a higher harmonic, and the higher harmonic is the ultimate fact that we don't actually need governance at all, were we a responsible and well-educated and aware society. But unfortunately, we are not. Unfortunately, our education comes from a government system which trains us to never know ourselves and to be subservient to the big machine and to always respect authority and to believe that self-governance would be chaos and bloodshed and crime on the streets, and everybody would be at each other's throats, and the world would simply implode. But that is not the case, folks. Self-governance is really what we should be doing. It's ultimately who we are. We are here to govern ourselves. We're here to know ourselves. We're here to do good in all that we do and to be the best that we can with the creative potential that we are given. That is really what the real purpose of mankind is. But unfortunately, the result of living in concentrated pockets of civilization, such as cities, is a control system and a system of governance and a nanny state, such as we see alive and well in the world today. And though self-governance would be a good thing, we certainly have a long way to go before we could get back to something like that. There's no way we could simply flick the switch on this society and hope that everybody could return to a state of self-governance, because many people simply are not capable of doing so. So what we need to do is to find a mechanism by which we can re-educate people to the power of themselves, help people become aware of themselves, help people express their own creative potential. And so what we have to do that is, of course, we need to rein this system in, rein our public trustees in, and remold this system into one that actually benefits humankind and nurtures humankind's creative potential with a view to leading humankind back to a position where we simply don't need governance at all. I mean, that would be the ultimate achievement, really, to get humankind back to that point. But as I said, we certainly have a lot of work and a long way to go before we will be at that point. So what to do in the meantime? Well, of course, one of the best things that you can do is to understand the system of control that has now been imposed over your life. Understand what it is, understand what you are, and begin to take steps to extricate yourself from the system. And really, the best way to extricate yourself from the system is exactly that, to know who you are, to know who and what you are. And people have heard me say this on air very many times, that you need to know who and what you are, and you need to stand in the power of your flesh. And standing in the power of your flesh is exactly how you can extricate yourself from the paper-based matrix that I have described for you in the earlier part of the show. And I want you to listen very carefully to what I'm about to tell you. And again, folks, when you apply this information to your life, when you apply anything that you hear from any of my shows in your life, understand, I don't want to get you in trouble. I'm not asking you to go out and just stand defiant against the system, create a scene and get yourself in trouble, get yourself locked up in jail. That's not what I'm asking, and that's not what I'm suggesting, and that's not what you should do. You should never attack the system, because the system is fiction. It's a cloud. If you attack it, you give it value, you give it substance, because you're attacking it. You're creating it into being. You're believing it exists. And because it is fiction and doesn't actually exist, it only exists on paper, then why are you attacking it? You don't have to attack it. All you have to do is know who and what you are, and you'll find that the blows it attempts to rain on you simply don't work. It's just like a wave beating against a rock. It doesn't do anything. And this is if you are able to stand in the power of your flesh. Because ultimately, flesh is who and what you are. And look, I know I've said this so many times on these shows, and it's a very difficult concept for people to understand. So all I can really do is give you examples of how the paper-based matrix actually gets you and tricks you into being part of its system, how the legal system entwines you within its web, and how you can not be part of that system, how you can simply be yourself, simply be a living entity of flesh with blood flowing through your veins, because that's ultimately what you are. But again, even with this information, if you go out and attempt to take the system on your own, then you may well get into trouble. So you need to help people around you gain this knowledge as well, because once the whole community remembers who and what they are and remembers how to stand in the power of their flesh, then it's game, set, and match for this whole corporate system. Because at that point, the corporate fiction will cease to exist. Because it only exists now in people's minds. But once people can change what they believe is possible and what they believe is real, and adjust their mindset and change their perspective, then the corporate fiction simply fades away like the cloud that it is. And you see, one of the biggest problems is that people have forgotten their flesh. People believe they are their name. They believe they are their occupation. Many people don't understand that they are a living spirit. And so they don't apply that knowledge to the reality in which they live. It's like your name. I mentioned the birth certificate before. The name that you have on your birth certificate, is that really your name or is that your calling? When someone asks me my name, I answer that my name is Man. I make that claim quite truthfully without frivolity or vexation based on peer-reviewed information supplied to me by the Anthropological Society because it's the best that I've got to go on. That's my name, Man. If you want my name, that's the name that I will give you because it's the best I have. It's the only name that I can actually claim ownership to because the word my signifies ownership. You said, what is your name? Asking me, what is my name? My signifies ownership. What name do I own? And Man is the only name that I can claim any ownership to, though I can't really claim ownership to it because all other men can also claim ownership to that name. If you want the other name, if you want the legal fiction, you want the name on my birth certificate, then what you need to ask for is my calling, because that is not my name. That is a legal entity that was created via an agreement entered into between my parents and the government. It had absolutely nothing to do with me. It's the name that was bestowed upon me should I wish to act in that corporate world. But if you look at my birth certificate, you will find that it bears the names of my mother and father and the government, and it bears government stamps all over the document, and it is signed off by the Registrar of Births, Deaths and Marriages, indicating that the government owns that document, therefore the government actually owns that name. If you are asking me to claim ownership of that name, then what you are essentially doing is asking me to commit fraud, because that is not my name. It is a calling that I use to operate within the parameters of the corporate world. You see, very often we don't understand English and we don't actually understand what we're saying. If a police officer asks you where you live, I would always ask him if it is a trick question because I live. If I didn't live, I wouldn't be standing here talking to you. They ask me, do I live at the address on my license? I say, of course I do, but not at the moment. And they'll say, well, where do you live at the moment? I say, well, at the moment I live here. Because I'm standing here talking to you and I'm alive. Are you suggesting that if I say I don't live at a certain address, it means that I'm deceased when I go to that address? Again, you are speaking English. If they say, where do you live? And you say, I live at this address, then they can presume that right now you are not alive. Right now you are in their jurisdiction because you are a dead corporate entity. Again, it's word magic. People ask me where I live, and I simply answer that I live because I am alive. If they ask me for my address, I say it is in the vessel that is standing before you. It doesn't have a fixed address. If it had a fixed address, this vessel would have roots. It would be like a tree. But it's not. It's mobile. It lives right here. If I take a step to the left, now it lives there. If I go down the road to the malt shop, now it lives in the malt shop. It lives wherever it is. It is the vessel that I inhabit. But what I'm attempting to do here, ladies and gentlemen, is just point out the fiction to you, point out the word magic to you, because there is so much of this word magic in the English language. There's so much of this word magic in the legal system. They trick you into doing things. When you submit an application, well, what does it mean to submit? It means that you put yourself under their control. And to apply means to beg. So you are begging to be under their control simply by submitting an application. And you've agreed to do this because you agreed to submit the application. And why did you submit the application? Well, you did so because you believe you are the name on your birth certificate, which is a corporate entity, and therefore you are bound by all of this legislation they create. But you're not. The name is. If you don't claim the name, then you're not bound by the legislation. And if you do claim the name, again, you've committed fraud anyway, because it's not actually your name, it's your calling. But what I'm attempting to do with all this, folks, is help you come to the realization that you are a living spirit inhabiting a vessel of flesh, and that nobody owns you. Nobody can control you apart from yourself, and that all you really need to know about law is the difference between good and bad. And as far as the legal fiction goes and the slavery system that is there to control you, there are only two words you need to know within that whole legal system, which will help that system comprehend who you are. And those two words are sui generis, or sui generis, as some people call it. Sui generis, is basically a legal understanding which proves you to be 100% unique, 100% sovereign, and therefore subject to your own jurisdiction. That's who you are. You are sui generis. But because you are sui generis, it's important to honor that and to recognize that in others, because everybody else is also sui generis. You have no jurisdiction over them. You have no right to question or say anything about what anybody does, because they are under their own jurisdiction. I mean, sure, if you see someone causing harm to somebody else, then they have broken their code of honor and they should be held accountable for their actions. But it's not up to you to inflict yourself upon someone. It's not up to me to attack a peace officer or a member of the police force or a judge or a lawyer or anybody who is locked into the belief that that system is real, because they are also sui generis. I'm not here to inflict myself upon them. I'm simply not going to allow them to inflict themselves upon me, because if they do, they're acting in a dishonorable manner, because I'm flesh and blood. I'm not the name. I'm not a corporate entity. I'm not subject to legislation. I am a living being of flesh. I'm a sentient soul here in my own capacity and under my own jurisdiction. And I know what good and bad is. I know what right and wrong is. And unless you can show me how I've harmed anybody by any action I've taken, then I'll be walking away from you, because you have no right of ownership over the vessel that I inhabit. And if you are claiming you do have a right of ownership over this flesh, then I accuse you of being part of a slavery system. And since you are an officer of the law or a representative of the law, which means that you are locked within that legal society by choice, should you push the matter, then I will see to it that you are held accountable for your actions under the parameters of that legal society that you have consciously chosen to enter into. But I am flesh, and you have no right of ownership over this flesh, because that is slavery. Of course, it's very difficult to do this sometimes. When you do it by yourself, it's very difficult to do this. If you're on the side of the road with three police officers, very often they'll just tase you, beat you up, and throw you in a cage because they can. If you're in front of a crowd of people, it's good to exercise your rights in this manner. And it's good to point this out to a court system as well, as long as you've got people there to back you up and to witness you standing in your power. But the best thing to do is to not even enter into the court. Don't go there when they summons you to court. Go and visit with them, because they've summoned that name. When they summons you, they're calling your spirit. Don't give them your spirit. Don't give them control over your spirit. Tell them you are there regarding the matter of your name, and you are there to speak about that case. But you didn't come on account of a summons. You came to visit with them to clarify the matter, because obviously there's been a mistake, because you are not the name, you are living flesh. And because you are living flesh and there's a matter regarding the name, then obviously there has been a mistake and you are here to seek remedy. But again, sometimes it's very difficult to do this, especially if you go to court by yourself, and especially in a state such as Queensland, Australia, where now you don't even get the choice to say that. You simply get picked up and locked in jail because you belong to a certain group. And this is the problem that we're seeing in Queensland, Australia. This is why I recently issued a statement asking the Attorney General of Queensland, Australia to show cause why he shouldn't be prosecuted for abuse of power and human rights violations. Really, when you look at what the Attorney General of Queensland has done, one could quite confidently say the man is guilty of treachery, sedition and treason, and of attempting to undermine democracy and the rule of law in Australia. And this is a very heavy charge to make against an Attorney General, but I make the charge quite openly because the legislation that he has introduced indicates that this is very much the case. In fact, it would appear that the entire Queensland government is guilty of this crime, and I would suggest that the entire Campbell-Newman government needs to be dismissed over this issue, because the recent VLAD legislation introduced by this government is a clear breach of human rights, it's a clear breach of trust, a clear abuse of power, and it is quite clearly sedition, treachery and treason against the people and nation of Australia. I think it's very important that a lot of noise be made about this legislation. When you look at it, folks, what it says is that it's legislation against violent and lawless associations, but it names these violent and lawless associations so loosely that it could include anybody. It could include a knitting club. It could be your local lifeline. It could be a chess club. I mean, anybody would fall under this category. Any group of more than two people could basically be jailed without trial under this legislation. This is exactly the type of legislation they used to single out a certain group in Germany in World War II, and this group was arrested without charge or trial, and we've all heard the stories of what happened after. And this is exactly what's been introduced in Queensland, Australia. And so, of course, in that type of a situation, it's probably going to be very difficult to exercise any right of flesh at all within this system, as it would appear that the Queensland government no longer recognises flesh as being valid and no longer recognises human beings as having any rights at all. So it's very difficult to know what to do in this situation, apart from attempt to wake others up to reality and to alert the people of Queensland at the clear and present danger they are currently facing at the hands of their most obviously out-of-control government. But again, folks, when you look at the new VLAD legislation in Queensland, what you're essentially seeing is legal fiction. It's all fiction. It's just stuff that they write down on pieces of paper that people apply to themselves because they believe they are their name. And when I talk about all this sort of stuff and I say you need to understand the power of your flesh and the beauty of your flesh and the true marvel of you even being, I do this because when you can truly understand what you are, the absolute miracle of your existence, and it is an absolute miracle, folks. I mean, think about it. You are a biological entity of flesh and blood and organs with this electromagnetic frequency running through you, and you are conscious. You are conscious. You can think. You can create. Look at what we've created. Look at this world. All the buildings we've built, the art, the wonderful things that we've done, and the damage that we've done, all of it. This is all because of who you are. This has all been created by human beings. This is incredible. Really think about that. Think about the power of your flesh to create, the power of an idea to create the world that we've got, the power of an idea to be free, the power of an idea to be a slave. Which idea are you going to have, and is it your idea? Think about the miracle of yourself, and it's astounding. It truly is astounding. When you can really grasp the wonder of your existence, you may think about it and go, yeah, it's really, really amazing. But then one day, the true profoundness of the fact that you are here may just hit you. And when the penny drops, you will go, oh my God, this is incredible. And what it has the potential to be is astronomical, absolutely astronomical. We are capable of so much. Were we not locked into this box of fiction that has been constructed for us, this disempowered box of fiction, and to be controlled by legal fiction, stuff that exists on paper, ideas that were put there by other people, and we were told that this idea is reality. But is it really your idea? It's not. It's just someone else's idea, because that's all this system is. It's just the idea that authority is real, the idea that the control mechanism exists. The idea that words on paper actually mean more than what is in your heart. That's what this system is. And it's ludicrous because it's all fiction. And the most important thing that it's done is keep people running on the treadmill so fast that they never have time to discover the truth and reality to their own existence. They run around doing this incredibly meaningless stuff all day, running, rushing, moving paper around, moving stuff around, running to work, running to this, running to that, being late for appointments, being on time for appointments, being this, catching buses, all this. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous, folks. We run around on the treadmill so fast in order to garner paper and social respect, and all of it is fiction. And all of it results in us never discovering the power of ourselves or really experiencing what we truly are. And that is the great dilemma that we are in. That is the great sorrow of the human race that they never get to experience themselves. Very often we go through life and it takes until we forget work and the kids have left home and we get old and we retire and we sit back in our chair and we wonder what it was all about. And somewhere through those moments, very often people discover themselves and they look back and they go, wow, what was all that for? Why did I do all of that just so I could be here now, pondering why I did it, what it was all about? And now that I've finally discovered myself, I'm too old to enjoy myself. I'm too old to really experience the potential that I once had because I was so busy being distracted with all of this stuff that just wasn't important. And it wasn't important because it wasn't me. It wasn't my art. It wasn't my expression of life, my expression of creation. All it was someone else's idea. And that's what this system is, folks. The control grid that you believe you have to be subservient to is just someone else's idea. The concept that your flesh is owned by somebody else and that you are subject to their authority is just someone else's idea. The fact that you have to pay to be alive, again, is somebody else's idea. Now, we are all caring, giving, good people. Most of the world are good people. Some of them aren't, but most of them are. You've often heard me say that around 3% of the world are born psychopathic. And people say, well, what is this? What is the problem with all of this? And personally, I don't think it's a problem, folks. I think we need that. I think we need to have the choice to go wrong so that we know how to go right. But if we don't have the choice between good and bad, then how can we ever grow? How can we ever get to where we should be? How can we ever make the conscious choice to evolve? Because an evolution of consciousness, an evolution in the way of thinking, an evolution in your mind, an evolution in human spirit and human potential and human creativity can never happen if we've only got one side of the picture. You've got to choose to evolve. You've got to choose to be good. You've got to choose to seize that capacity to help others and to help the world and to do the right thing. But it's got to be a choice. You've got to choose to do these things, folks. And if you aren't given the choice between good and evil, then what have you got to choose from? You just bumble along and go where it would have ended up anyway. And if that is the case, then what is the point to life? What is the point of being here? What's the point of the whole experiment? There is no point. And that's why that choice has to be there. And that's what I think this time in history is. And that's why things are getting so negative. Because we've been given the choice. You guys are asleep. You're not choosing. So we're going to make it more and more negative until you choose. Which do you want? Do you want tyranny or do you want freedom? Make the choice now. Because that's what this time in history is. And to make the choice for freedom, you don't have to fight anybody. You don't have to raise a gun. You don't have to raise your fist. You don't have to shoot anybody. You don't have to have a revolution. You don't have to have a war. You don't have to overthrow a government. All you've got to do is make a conscious choice between good and bad, between right and wrong, between the power of your flesh and the power of a fictional legal system which only exists on paper, the power of a meme. That's what you've got, folks. You've got reality or you've got the Matrix. And right now you've got a choice and you're being offered this choice on a silver platter. The question is, which do you choose? Things are really coming to a head at this time in history, ladies and gentlemen. Things really are. The new legislation that I've just outlined for you earlier in the show that's coming in Australia here is unprecedented. We may well see this sort of stuff happening around the rest of the planet. And it's going to continue this way, and it's going to put people in jail, and it's going to enslave large numbers of the population, large sections of the population, basically any group they want that speaks out against the government, unless the people see above the fiction and see through the fiction and begin to stand up against the fiction. But as I've said, it's very difficult to do this on your own because basically the police are thugs, folks, and they do the wrong thing. Even if you do stand up against the system, they'll get you some other way because they can, and they are basically above the law. Recently, we saw a man beaten to death in the United States by police on the road. They literally beat a man to death. He was prone on the street, open and shut case. The man was murdered by police, and of course, the police got off scot-free. They were seen that they hadn't overstepped the mark at all. So police are being given a free rein to brutalize the population, and the legal framework is being put in place in order for them to do so. and in order to bypass the judicial system should they choose to arrest anybody in a group of over two people. This is where we're going, and the problem with it all when trying to deal with this type of situation is that people always attempt to deal with it by using the fiction itself. They never realize that it's actually fiction. As I attempted to point out to you earlier in the program, our governments, all of our governments, every democratically elected government, any government that is voted into existence by the people of their nation anywhere in the world, consist of a group of public trustees. That's all they are. They're just people, just like you, just like me. And all the rules that they write down on paper to constrain you are just that. They're just words on paper. They don't mean anything. They don't mean anything to you because you are flesh, and they are flesh just like you, and you are sui generis. Therefore, you are not subject to the laws of your peers because you have no peers. You are 100% unique, and therefore you can only possibly be answerable to yourself and under your own jurisdiction and the jurisdiction of God, whatever you perceive God to be. That's really who all of us are, and that's what this time in history is presenting us with, the opportunity to remember this about ourselves, should we choose to do so. We all have rights, folks. We all have rights, inherent rights, unalienable rights that exist in our reality simply because we exist in reality, because these rights are inherent to all things that are alive. Why don't people exercise these rights? Well, very often the answer to this question is fear, but more often the real answer, unfortunately, is laziness. Most people actually want a nanny state to look after them. They want someone to pick them up when they fall. They want to know that they're going to wake up in the morning and the world is going to be exactly the way they left it when they went to bed. And they are too lazy to exercise their rights, because when you exercise rights, it does take energy. It is an exercise of power. You are standing in your power, and power requires energy to use, and most people are simply too lazy to use this power. They want someone to look after them. They don't want the boat rocked. They don't care if the world is the way it is. They don't care about what's going on overseas. They don't care about other people. They just care about their own existence. Very often they are this way because they're trained to be this way, so it becomes very difficult to judge these people, but it is an unfortunate fact regarding our society. And that's why, as I've so very often said, the best way for you to change the world is to change yourself, to change the way you view reality, change the way you view yourself, and change the way you view other people. And you need to understand the power that you have, and you need to lead by example in all that you do. Be a shining light in your community and encourage others to do the same. That really is our only way out of this situation. And now's the time that we can do it. Now is a time better than any other time in history. All we have to do is pay attention and step up to the challenge. That is it for me today, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining me on the air today. It's always a pleasure to have your company. Thank you to anybody who has ever made a contribution to thecrowhouse.com or the Inlakesh Foundation. Please do check out the Full Circle Project. There's a link on thecrowhouse.com. I absolutely do believe in the Full Circle Initiative, and I think we can make a difference if people get on board with this project. I think it is an idea whose time has come, and I really want to push it this year. I will be spending the next few months working on the film, and I'll also look forward to seeing those people who are going to come to the Freedom Summits that will be conducted in Sydney, Melbourne, and Brisbane through late February and early March. But that is it for me now, folks. I'll look forward to speaking to you again next week. Please take good care until then. Inlakesh.